Chapter 9. Nana had called in the palace's best scrubwomen to deal with the blood that stained the tile grout and splattered up the walls. The idea of would-be killers fouling the Princella's bedchamber deeply offended her. She had the room emptied of furniture and then got down on her hands and knees beside the scrubwomen and brushed with vigour. One of the reasons the palace servants respected her so was that, though she was the closest to the royal family, she never put on airs and she was never above getting her own hands dirty. More than that, she genuinely understood and appreciated their labour and skill. Nana had lived in the palace nearly 30 years. She had grown up on a humble dairy farm in the western duchy of Crenivale, but she had soon discovered all that lay ahead for her at home was the endless boredom of pitching hay, pulling teats and lugging milk pails, either for her parents or for some future husband. By 16 summers, she was heartily tired of living ankle-deep in cow shit. A travelling carnival stopped in a nearby town, and its bright-coloured costumes and cheery symbols made it the most exciting thing she'd ever seen. The second night she visited, a young carny worker started flirting with her. The third night, Nana ran away with him without a moment's hesitation. Yet by the time she travelled 2 weeks with the carnival, she had seen through its cheap and gaudy tricks, just as she discovered her lover's dull wits and habit of gambling away all his pay. By the time the show reached Cascada, she was fed up with the travelling life. She took a job as a kitchen worker in the palace. One day long ago, the young Princella, Cressa, was fretful, and her nursemaid could not get her to lie down for her nap. The nursemaid walked about the palace seeking to distract the fussing child. In the kitchen, Nana charmed her by blowing soap bubbles. The next day and the day after, the Princella demanded to visit her friend in the scullery. Nana began looking forward to these visits, making the lonely child little toys out of carved soap bars. Soon, the nursemaid found it easier to bring the Princella down to splash in the wash bucket with Nana while she enjoyed a glass of mead and a long gossip with her friends at a kitchen table. It did not take long for the palace chamberlain, Tianora, to discover the truth of the matter. She sent the official nursemaid packing and installed Nana in her stead. As the eldest of 6 siblings, Nana had experience with children. She raised Cressa. Wherever Cressa went, Nana went too, even if it was on a damnable voyage to Tidewater Keep in chilly Lothrod. From a start as a dairymaid, she'd spent an awful lot of her life in castles and among nobility, and she'd discovered that the gentry generally smelled better than commoners and spoke highfalutin words, but that was about all you could count on. Some were dumb, some were tricky, and many weren't worth cow slobber. She never had a child of her own, but in every way she bonded with her charge. That Queen Katrina was a cold one who had paid scant attention to her daughter. But Cressa had been an easy child, turning to her nursemaid's affection as a sunflower twirls to sunlight. The only issue in her whole life that Cressa ever put her foot down about was her choice of Ambrice's husband. But Nana judged him a fine match for her girl. Any fool could see how he doted on her. Now, Cressa ruled, and Nana had reached her late middle years, slightly stout and getting stouter, with a frizz of brown hair and a perfectly oval face set off by the white lace collars she habitually wore. She took care of Cressa's daughter, who already showed more spirit than her mother and needed a firmer hand. Cerulea also depended upon Nana less than Cressa had. For one thing, her Cressa was a more attentive, more loving mother than Katrina had been. Katrina the strategist spent her time amongst her gentry, watching them with narrowed eyes, while Cressa snuck away from all those fawning courtiers to play in the nursery. For another, Cerulea had all those beasts. I don't mind the cats, I tell ye, Nana said to the footman who carried the four-poster back into the freshly scrubbed room. They keep themselves so clean. Kind of fancy a cat purring in front of the fire. Cosy like, you know. But them hounds with their dirty paws. Aye, use easy. Pikai, shift your old bones. Get out of the way of the table. She used her foot to nudge the elderly dog, but her touch was gentle. There now, all back in order. So much better. Just put that chest over there, tick lock.
The floor's might damp, Nana, he said. I'll build up the fire to help it dry. I've some applewood logs that should chase away the lye smell.
Thank you, Ticklock. I'll leave the window open too. I do thank you all, lads. Tell Cook Bessie I ask her to give you each one of her meat pies.
The helpers left, leaving the door open to air out the room, and Nana got busy resettling all Cerulea's little treasures where they belonged. The cats, who had been hiding from the bustle, draped themselves around the suite, watching Nana with eyes of green and gold as she moved about.
Ah, Nana, I was worried about you, came Lady Fania's voice from the doorway. How fare you, my dear?
By the time Nana whirled around and dropped a curtsy, she had pulled her face out of the scowl that had set in when she recognised the vixen's voice.
So kind of you, m'lady. With her amber and brown locks artfully arranged and dressed in silk with mink fur around cuffs and neck, Lady Fania leaned against the open door jamb, the picture of ease and privilege.
Oh, but you didn't answer, Nana. Weren't you frightened by the uproar last night? Was it terrifying?
Nana was not about to discuss her feelings with a chit of a lady-in-waiting whom she didn't trust as far as she could throw her.
Not too bad, she replied. How may I serve you, m'lady?
Fania was not as thick-headed as some. She heard the curtness in Nana's reply. She got to the point.
Where is our darling Princella today?
Out riding, m'lady.
Oh, so thoughtful to remove her from the scene of the crime. When will she return?
I'm not certain, m'lady.
Excuse me,
interrupted Ticklock, who had returned with a basket of applewood. Lady Fania stood in the doorway in his way. Proper etiquette would be to wait silent and still until a lady moved on her own accord. Nana was surprised and gladdened by Ticklock's boldness.
Oh, I'm so sorry to inconvenience you, said Lady Fania, moving aside, her condescension re-wetting the floor. When she does return, Nana, I'd like to be notified. I'm dying to see her. In fact, I've got the prettiest little bracelet to take her mind off last night's unpleasantness.
So kind of you, m'lady.
You will send for me, Nana, the moment she returns,
Lady Fania pressed, with authority in her tone.
Of course, m'lady, said Nana, curtsying again.
Lady Fania regarded her sternly, and Nana dropped her eyes. Ticklock finished sweeping all the fireplace ash into a bucket and stood up to carry the bucket out of the room. But Lady Fania still blocked the doorway. This time Ticklock waited politely and quietly, but his tall body loomed.
See that you do,
Fania replied, twirled on her heel and left. Ticklock set the bucket outside the door and built up a roaring fire.
Is there anything else I can do, Nana?
Help me lay the clean bed linens, lad. I don't mind telling you, I'm rather tuckered today.
They remade the bed, and then Ticklock sped off to other duties. Nana was pleased that the room was set to rights, but she felt deeply unsettled. Her Cressa was in trouble. Trouble that she could not fix with lye soap.
Nana tossed a blanket around her shoulders and dashed outside to the grand stable set in the rear of the administrative wing of the palace. The stableman Hiccough and she had settled into an understanding. It was not quite a love affair, and certainly not a marriage, but it suited them both. She found Hiccough, a short man with a broad smile whose considerable belly strained the ties on his shirts, oiling some harnesses in one of the rear tack rooms. The place smelled like straw and horse piss, but Nana found the odour familiar, even comforting.
"How are you?"
he asked her.
"Weary. I slept but little last night."
He wiped the neat's foot oil off his hands carefully and gently kneaded her shoulders with his strong, calloused hands.
"Those vermin," he said. "The staff talks of naught else. I heard you weren't touched, but I've been hankering to see you. A bad business."
I was awful scared.
"Have you seen their bodies?"
Hiccough asked. "No, and I don't want to."
"You should give them dogs a bone, old beauty. Some of them bites are dog bites. I'm real glad you have them by."
"Do the servants know what 'tis about?"
Nana asked.
"If they do, they're keeping mum," he said. "Lots of gossip, but little sense. I've asked around a bit, casual-like, but as you know, since Teonora took ill, Retzel hired most of the help. If you ask too many questions these days, you find yourself out on your rump."
"Rat skull, I calls him," she muttered. "Don't stop that rubbing."
"Under your breath, I wager,"
Hiccough said, grinning.
"I'd like to see you call him that to his face."
"I'm not afeard of any of that lot," she said, tossing her head. "Leastways, not from myself. For the Queen and the little one, I am deathly afeard. Rub a little lower, would you?"
"When will the Lord Consort return? 'Twould be helpful to have him about."
"No one knows," said Nana, scrunching her brow. "That's the worst of it. Not bloody likely they would have tried something like last night if Lord Ambrose was in the house. He would have bashed their skulls with his bare hands."
"He's a brave man, I'm not denying, but swords will beat out hands any day."
Hanging around waiting for something to do makes me fidgety, and then my heart starts beating all quick-like again. I'd fain visit Bessie and Borta in the kitchens, but they'll be into the supper rush."
"Aye, you best stay out of their way."
Hiccough gave her shoulders a concluding pat.
"Why don't you visit the Church of the Waters? You always find comfort there."
"Aye, that I do. I'll pop round that way and say my prayers. I'll pray for the Queen and my chickadee, and I'll pray for Lady Fania to fall down the stairs and break her skinny neck."
Nana turned to leave the tack room and then came back and threw her arms around Hiccough. He held her close, murmuring in her ear,
"There, there. Overtired you are, me old gal. We just do our best, and the rest is not our business. By the grace of the waters, all will end well."